It is Monday, August the 5th, 2013. I am Steve Gerwek, the webmaster of www.gerwek.net, Gerwek's source on the World Wide Web, for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. And today I welcome a very special guest to Gerwek.net, somebody who's been on the independent scene for a long time, ECWA, Ring of Honor, Chaotic Wrestling, and now is a superstar with Lucha Libre USA. Today I give you RJ Brewer. How are you doing today, RJ?
Hey, Steve. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
Well, I look forward to talking to you. It's been a while. We've been following your career, obviously, independently through Ring of Honor, through Chaotic, and now Lucha Libre. So let's start with currently what's going on with Lucha Libre USA. Of course, wrestling fans had a chance to see it for a while on MTV, MTV2, and I guess it's on Hula now. What's the status of Lucha Libre USA, and how are things going with that promotion right now?
Well, we had the two seasons on MTV2 and then Hulu.com. Right now, I believe both seasons are on there, season one and season two. Season two was a full 13 episodes. Season one, I think, was only like 6 episodes. And, you know, it was a Mexican-based wrestling company, Lucha Libre style, that was brought to the States. And, you know, the live crowds were good, and I think the first season was a learning process for them. I think they started to film in different cities with different sound crews, different lighting crews. So I think they realized how hard it was to go on the road so early. So that's why, you know, the second season they started filming in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in the same building. So we had a lot of consistency there. And if you watch the two seasons, it's like night and day. Season one was not very good, and season two was pretty well produced. And a lot of people were saying the production value was, you know, even better than TNA and a lot of other companies. So right now, I'm not sure what's going on. They're at a standstill. I mean, like I said, the first two seasons are still on Hulu. But as to, future TV stuff, I don't quite know. That's not really my department. I don't get involved in that kind of decision making. But I'm hoping that we get back on TV soon, and I can start continuing to spread the RJ Brewer message all over.
I remember when they announced the show was going to be on MTV, the Lucha Libre USA. People were saying, well, there's not a real demand for Lucha Libre wrestling here in the United States. Obviously, some people with cable can watch, like through Galavision, they can watch AAA or EMLL. But I guess in general, from your perspective and traveling around the country, do you think there is a real clamoring from the fan base for Lucha Libre wrestling here in the United States?
Well, I definitely think there is for the simple reason that the Mexican population keeps growing, and that's what they're accustomed to. Down in Mexico, Lucha Libre is second to soccer, I believe, in terms of, audience and viewership. So there definitely is a demand. Within United States wrestling fans, not so much. There might be a small crossover because, wrestling fans here in the States are used to more of the sports entertainment. And if they don't like sports entertainment, they go to more alternatives like, Ring of Honor, TNA, or the Independents. Mexican wrestling fans love Lucha Libre, and that's what they want to see, and there's not too much of it here in the States. Like you said, you could see certain things on certain Spanish channels, but it's all, I think it's all old and taped stuff. I don't think it's too current. So they saw this demographic as a growing audience that could be taken advantage of. And from the live audiences, from the 3+ years that I've been traveling around, we were outdrawing some of the, outdrawing Ring of Honor and TNA in our first season. We were the smallest crowd we ever had. It was like 2,000 people, and we had up to like 6,000 in San Jose one time. And these are rabid, Mexican wrestling fans who wanted to see Lucha Libre. So there's definitely a demand. The Mexican population keeps growing, and as we see from the government, they're not going to do anything about it. So I think there is definitely a future there, and I think getting on a Spanish-speaking radio TV station is probably the way to go, because MTV like I said, I don't know how many people would go there to watch a Lucha Libre show. I think they would probably go on a Spanish station, and that's probably what they should have done. But, again, that's not part of my decision-making, and I'm hoping that soon that we do get on some kind of TV network.
We'll definitely get to immigration and the government, trust me on this interview. But sticking with wrestling right away here, because we're talking about Lucha Libre, and obviously, you were talking the fan base is sports entertainment. That's what we've been geared to. I think TNA at one time was more of a wrestling-based company, but as you've seen in years, they've gone more towards the sports entertainment. They're kind of a WWE light, I think, in certain ways. But there is a market for other products. We've seen, say, Shine, an all-women's group. run on internet pay-per-views. We've seen Dragon Gate USA. Actually, the New Japan G1 Climax is currently on internet pay-per-view as well. So I was thinking maybe that could be a new format for your promotion here, going towards internet pay-per-view, since there is a number of them out there, and there is a fan base that want an alternative product to WWE or TNA. So maybe thoughts on somewhere down the line, maybe your company going to pay-per-view.
Sure, I don't think that's out of reach at all. But I think when you talk about someone like New Japan, they're an established company. So I think that, you know, the news, you know, New Japan's got its fans here in the States and in Japan, and there might be a lot of people who don't quite know about it too much, but for the most part, people know what New Japan Wrestling is, so to put a pay-per-view on isn't too far-fetched. But for our company, where we're still fairly new and we haven't really established too much consistency with TV, I think going to pay-per-view right away would not be good. But definitely somewhere down the line, if we had a consistent few seasons of TV and then doing a pay-per-view or something like that, would definitely be good. But again, probably too early to do it when you haven't really established too much consistency on the TV front.
Can you talk a little bit about the talent with Lucha Libre USA? Because obviously it seems like it's a roster that changes from time to time, and maybe some of the regulars. Because I think there's, even though you were on MTV, there's still a fan base out there that's not familiar with the product. Can you kind of talk about maybe who the champions are and the current roster with the promotion?
Sure. I mean, you know, I was kind of on the same boat when I first started. I hadn't watched too much Mexican wrestling, and I didn't really know too many of the guys. But then when these guys come out, these fans are screaming for them. So clearly they know who they are. You know, some of the bigger names, you know, Marco Corleone, who used to wrestle as Mark Jindrak, he's a huge star in Mexico now. He does, you know, he's on one of the top-rated soap operas every night, and he does, you know, game shows and writes children's books. So wrestling to him is like number three or four in terms of his job. So he's a big star in Mexico. Liz Mark Jr., who you remember from WCW, he's one of the regulars. And Blue Demon Jr. was wrestling there for a while, and not on the TV show, but most recently when we were doing our live tours, Blue Demon Jr. was there, and he's one of the bigger Mexican stars. La Parca was also there, and a lot of the minis and you know, the Chica stars and Exoticos and stuff. So it's a nice mix, and it's always a family show. The live shows are always very interactive, and they do contests, and there's always a match for everybody. You know, my match is obviously the one where people just want to kill me, and but then they have, you know, minis matches, and they have three ways, and they have women's matches and legends matches where they have two Mexican legends against each other. So it's definitely a unique product. And like I said, all we need is that consistent TV spot and for people to start knowing about us a little more. And I think things would take off, especially, like I said, with the Mexican growing population, it's almost impossible not to.
Now, I haven't seen the product in a while since it's been off MTV. Are you still working with Lizzie?
No, she was only there for a little while, and I dumped her, so so that was that. So I'm a single man now, but you know, we haven't filmed shows in a long time, so you know, if and when we do, we'll see, you know, where things pick up in terms of that kind of storyline. But you know, my main focus there is pretty much to get rid of the mask and get rid of the you know, the immigrants. So that's going to stay consistent no matter who's by my side.
Can you talk about the transition? Obviously, independently on the East Coast, you were with ECWA, Ring of Honor, you were Hurricane John Walters, and then you went out west with the Lucha Libre, and you transitioned to a new character. Mm-hmm. Your character was based on being the son of Jan Brewer, who was the governor of Arizona. How did that come about? How did that transition to the new character come about for you?
Well, in 2010, I believe it was 11, 12, 13. Yes, it's been 3 years. Yeah, 2010, I had just spent my first winter down in Florida, and I didn't wrestle independence down there at all. It was mainly up in the New England area, and I got to the point where I was just not sure I wanted to wrestle anymore. I lived in Florida for 6 months, and I loved it. I was working down there. I was living by the beach. I just bought a house, and I don't know, I just kind of lost the wrestling bug. It was just kind of, I think I'm done with it. But then I had gotten contacted by them about this, you know, about this particular role. And at first, when I first got the email, I said, well, Lucha Libre, you got the wrong guy. That's not me. But then they, you know, they told me what the, you know, what the main focus was going to be, you know, trying to, you know, being this anti-immigration guy. And I said, well, I can definitely do that, because all I'm really doing is just taking my real political views and just magnifying it for the camera. And, it's kind of taken a life of its own for the past 3 years. I've kind of molded it into whatever I feel comfortable saying. And yeah, I mean, it's just, the transition to me wasn't hard, because when I was wrestling on the independents and Ring of Honor and Chaotic and, you know, ECWA and all across the East Coast, it was fun. Obviously I was known as a good wrestler, but I didn't really have a voice. There was nothing to me. It was just kind of like, oh, he's going to have a good match. He's going to have a nice 15-20 minute match, but then you won't really remember too much about him. And now that I'm doing this, I get more of a reaction by just talking. And I go out there and I cut a, you know, 5-10 minute promo in front of 2,000 Latinos. They remember me more just for my words and my actions. And as a wrestler, any wrestler will tell you that that's the ultimate goal, because it saves your body in the end. To go out there and do, you know, 25 minutes of crazy stuff and getting dumped on your head, there's not much longevity in that. But right now what I'm doing is I'm just going out there, I'm talking about immigration, what's wrong with it, why these people shouldn't be here wrestling in this country. I just got all this heat and I didn't take a bump, so it's great. The transition wasn't hard at all.
We got a question here from Twitter. Chuck from Twitter wants to know if you thought the new character of Jack Swagger, when he went more towards the constitutionalist, Republican, conservative, libertarian character, along with Zeb Coulter, was kind of a play on your character.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And that's not, you can ask anybody who knows me, and they're actually the ones who pointed it out first, because I don't watch WWE TV, but I remember that night I was sitting at home and I got all these text messages, and I checked my Facebook and I had, like, you know, posts about what was going on Raw, and I was confused. And then the next day I watched it on YouTube, and it just so happened to be 2 weeks after I was on Nightline, you know, 3 million people watching me on Nightline. And then 2 weeks later, ironically enough, they do this character. So I kind of put two and two together. From what I understand from a couple people who work for WWE, and the word I'm hearing is that Vince was irate that a non-WWE guy was getting the kind of press I was getting. So they didn't really even know where they were going to go with it. It just said, we need to make a character to match it. And I remember when I first watched on YouTube the next day, I said, well, this isn't going to work for them, because the reason it's working for me is because of the people I'm wrestling. Number one, it's, you know, I'm wrestling Mexican lucha stars. And number two, I'm wrestling in front of Mexican fans who take immigration to heart. When you got a guy out there talking to a bunch of American fans about immigration in front of 12-year-old John Cena fans who don't care about that kind of stuff, it's just not going to go over. And from what I understand, it didn't either. I remember, like, 3 weeks after they debuted, one of my friends said, clear as day on Raw, you could hear boring chants. And I said, well, that's the reason I wouldn't have worked there as that character either, because it's just not the right demographic. So, yeah, I definitely think it was that. And like I said, I've said in other interviews, that's capitalism, man. I'm all for it. If they think they can make money, they're not offending me by doing that. It is what it is. It's just two different. It's two different markets, and it's not. I don't think either one's going to affect each other. So, yeah, I definitely think it was a response to what I was doing, all the press I was getting. But in the end, I don't think it made a difference.
How did the Nightline segment interview come about, and how do you think it came off once you watched the final piece?
Well, you know, in the media, once you do one thing, so many different other media outlets follow. I had done, I don't remember what my first big piece of press was. I've done so many radio interviews. You know, I did CNN, I did Fox, I did a couple magazines, Harper's Magazine, the Geraldo Rivera radio station. I don't remember which one it was, but I got an we got a call from a guy from the LA Times who wanted to do a front page story on me. And he had heard about me from another magazine, and that magazine had heard about me from another magazine. So the LA Times article, which was huge because I think next to the New York Times, the LA Times is the biggest publication in the country. So being front page of the LA Times was huge. And I think that's where the Nightline people heard about it, or it might have been from, like, the Associated Press newswire that they sent out. I'm not sure, but it was definitely from another, because I had asked a reporter, and it was definitely from another news site. So that's why turning down any interview is not a good idea, because you just never know who might be listening and what it might open the door to. So, I'm pretty sure that's where it came about. And I thought it was good. I thought the Nightline piece was good. I thought they could have made me out to be like a big, you know, flaming asshole, and could have been this bigot, and this, you know, and they did twist a few of my words, but for the most part, I thought the interview was well done, made me look credible, and it didn't present me as this crazy pro wrestler who rips his shirt and beats his chest and just screams about Mexicans. It showed me more of an educated person that knew what he was talking about. Maybe a little crazy, a little loony, but that's their job too. So, no, I thought it was well done.
Because I know obviously with the media, they like to spin things. So
sure.
You could say this, and then the way they present it on TV is totally different. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm glad at least they let you speak and they didn't twist your words too much, because
right.
We see that all the time where you say one thing and when they put it on TV, it's totally different than what you said.
Yeah,
they get totally out of context.
And you're at their mercy. You can't really do anything about it. Cause, you going on some internet radio show and saying, hey, that show where 4 million people heard me was lying, well, you're not going to convince all the people that saw it. So people are still going to come away with that message regardless of how many times you try to clear your name.
Well, I think obviously right now we're hearing more and more about immigration because it looks like at some point they're going to vote on it here in the United States Congress. Your thoughts on where it stands now? Do you think it's going to pass? And obviously what the impact would be if it would pass the Senate?
Well, the biggest fear, not so much from the Democrats because I think they already have the Latino vote, is the biggest fear from the Republican side is that they're going to lose the Latino vote, even though they don't have it. You know what I mean? I think they know that if they don't support some kind of immigration reform, that their party's already done, and I think it might be too late, unfortunately. They did it in 1986. They passed immigration reform where they were supposed to, you know, where they granted amnesty. They were supposed to secure the border, and they did everything, everything but secure the border. And I think if the immigration reform bill that the Senate passed is pretty much the same thing. It's, hey, let's give amnesty, let's give a pathway to citizenship to all these 11 million that are here, and then let's secure the border. But I think securing the border is the number one thing. And it's not just the Mexican border. Obviously, that's my job, is to go out there and say that, you know, Mexican immigrants are ruining the country and that stuff. But it's not just that, because 40 to 50% of the immigrants that are here overstayed their work visas, and they were here as guests legally at some point. So that's the department that needs help too. ICE doesn't have the resources to find these people, deport them, and like I said in one of my YouTube videos, they're phantoms. You don't even know who they are, because when they come here, not like they're getting fingerprinted on their way out. So nobody even knows who's here, who's not here, and it's just a big mess. And I think the American people are getting sold out for the Latino vote, and it's really sad. And I don't think it's going to get better, no matter what kind of immigration reform they pass. I think the damage has already been done. Very unfortunate.
Two-part question. Do you think it will pass? And then I don't think people even really realize what would be included. Obviously, you talk about the amnesty, but as I understand it as well, they would be excluded from the Obamacare tax. So
right. If
they come, if they're here, obviously a corporation would be more willing to hire them because they're exempted from the Obamacare tax versus an everyday worker here in the United States would fall under the same laws of the Obamacare. So who would be more attractive to a corporation, the guy exempted from the Obamacare tax or the guy who's not?
Exactly. These big corporations, not only they know that they can pay these people less money, but then they don't have to provide a healthcare option for them. So who are they going to hire? Exactly. And I just don't think people realize that the costs cost to support illegals is. And then you get a lot of the liberals that say, oh, well, they're working jobs that Americans won't work, and they're buying stuff when they're here. But if there's a recent study by the Heritage Foundation that shows the disparity in the cost, what they actually pay into the system as to what we actually pay for them to live here is just staggering. And there's a documentary out there called They Come to America. That's Sean Hannity had the guy Michael Lynch or Dennis Lynch. I don't remember his name, but he did a two-part documentary. One is, you know, the cost of illegal immigration. The second one was the cost of amnesty. And these costs are real. And it's just insane how much it costs. And that's all just because of the incompetence of the government to secure the border in the first place. And now we're seeing exactly what's happening. So I don't know if they're going to sign it. I think the Republicans are being pressured to sign the bill. But at the same time, a lot of hardcore Americans don't want them to. So there's that conflict there, what do we do, you know? And these politicians are all up for themselves, and with the exception of a few. So I'm not really sure. I can guess one way or the other. I'm just kind of waiting and seeing what will happen.
You know, you were talking about the Republicans losing the Latino vote, and I think we're just getting to the point where we're losing our grip because we're coming more and more a socialist country, so the dependency from welfare and unemployment is taking – control of the country. So obviously you're going to vote, the people that are in that boat will vote for those individuals that will continue expanding these programs plus Obamacare. So I think we're getting close to the point where you know, if 50% or 60% of the people are on federal assistance, they're going to continue to vote for federal assistance. They're not going to vote for a conservative or a constitutionalist or a whatever label you want to come up with, libertarian, who says, no, we got to cut all this back. So I think we're getting really close to the point where we may just totally go towards a totally socialist country and just totally lose our constitutional freedoms.
Right. Well, you know, I don't think that most Latinos, as you saw in the past election, aren't voting for Republican anyways. So I think if they say, oh, yeah, we'll give amnesty to all these illegals, I think the Republican Party is going to start losing American votes. And that's the Americans are still the majority here, and they're still voting more than Latinos are. So that's why I say they shouldn't bend over and give amnesty to these illegals at all, because they're going to lose white voters. I mean, look what happened to Romney. He got less votes than John McCain did. So Republicans stayed home and didn't even vote. So that shows you right there how weak of a candidate he was and how much people are just almost fed up with the party. So they need to go back to the values that made them good. They need to be small government, low taxes, and stick to the Constitution. I think the Republican Party can revive themselves. But right now, being a watered-down version of the Democratic Party is just not working. And like you said, all these welfare and entitlement programs are bankrupting the country. And those the deficit is one of the – I think 40% of the deficit comes from those, you know, Social Security and Medicare. And then you had a guy like Paul Ryan saying we had to cut back. And all the old people are freaking out. Oh, he's going to kill grandmother. Well, we have to cut something. You know what I mean? Some of these welfare, these entitlement programs need to be cut back. And as you see, Social Security is in trouble because less people are working and more people are on government assistance. I think there's like 11 states in the country right now where there's more people getting aid than that are actually working. That's not good.
Well, Granny is going to die with the death panels under Obamacare anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's just...
So just cut her off and say, you don't need that heart transplant. You don't need surgery. You know, take a couple aspirin, go home, you'll be fine.
I think people will see how bad it really is once it kicks in. And, you know, then people will realize how bad that health care bill is. But until now, you can keep telling the people and they're still going to support it. But when they get denied for something or they have to pay $5,000 a year for their coverage, they might open their eyes.
That's something I've been preaching. Listen to my podcast and talk about my political rants is I don't see a lot of difference between Republicans and Democrats anymore. And especially at this last election, when we saw Obama versus Romney and really the last election, previous election, we saw John McCain. When you look at who finances these guys, it's the big banks,
sure,
of the Federal Reserve. You're seeing JP Morgan Chase, you're seeing Wells Fargo. And so if they're funding both parties,
why would they do that, right? I mean,
yeah, you have both fighters in a prize fight. You can't lose.
Both Romney and Obama both supported the TARP bailout. They both supported the bailout of the auto industry. Neither one of them served in the army, which isn't a prerequisite, but neither one of them was served their country. They're both banked by Goldman Sachs. They both passed healthcare bills. Romney did the one in Massachusetts. So essentially, their policies were identical. The only different thing was the party name and their color. That was pretty much it. And I said that for the longest time. The fact that he got in there, I mean, he was picked years ago to be the candidate. I think they picked these guys long before an election actually happens, and there was no way he was going to win. And I said it in my Nightline interview. By the time the Nightline interview aired, the election was already over, but the lady had asked me there. She goes, what's your prediction on the election? I said, Obama's going to win big, and she was shocked that somebody who's, constitutional guy would say that. I said, it's a couple different things. I said, number one, Obama's got the country brainwashed. Number two, Romney's a weak candidate. And number three, people are just going to, they're going to go with the devil they know as opposed to the one they don't know. And there's no way Romney had a chance. I was offering all my friends who thought he was going to win $1,000 bets. I was like, let's bet right now. That's how sure I was. And nobody took it. I could have been a rich guy.
Yeah. The sad thing, the alternative in the last election was Ron Paul, because he was funded by private donations, the military. I think 70% of his donations coming from the military. And then as we were talking offline together, he's portrayed as a kook. That,
yeah.
He's anti-war. He's not with it. He's an old guy. He's out of date. And the guy clicked with so many. I don't know about your state, but where I was before the primaries, the Republican primary, there were Ron Paul stickers, signs all over. And then when it came time for the election, he finished like third or fourth place. And I'm thinking, now how can that be? And then I'm thinking, Could there be voter fraud? I mean,
no,
I
think what you're seeing is passionate people who are going to his rallies. Mitt Romney would have rallies that would have like 500 people. Ron Paul would have rallies that would have like 2,500, 3,000 people. the media basically killed Ron Paul's chances of winning. Anytime he would come in second or first in a straw poll, they wouldn't even say his name. He would get less time to talk than other ones, and it's for the simple reason that he wasn't backed by the media and the big banks and the establishment like all these other politicians. I remember the GOP primaries. You had Ron Paul, Santorum, Romney, Gingrich. The only one who was saying we need to take all our troops out was Ron Paul, and he was the only one that actually served in the war. And then he was the one getting backed by the soldiers and getting donations from the armed forces. So what does that tell you about the people who are serving overseas? They even know that the war is crap. And the one guy who served is getting is telling people we need to get out of there, and then he's being called crazy and lunatic, even though the troops are agreeing with him. So. Yeah, I mean, the media made it clear that they didn't want that guy in, and I think in an honest debate, if it wasn't rigged, the election was actually a real election, and the debates were no holds barred. Ron Paul would have made Obama look like a little kid. If those two actually debated, it wouldn't even have been a contest. It would have been embarrassing.
That's a great point, because we've been hearing a little bit about Jesse Ventura in 2016, and he's saying if there's a grassroots movement, if people can get his name in all 50 states, and he can be guaranteed to be in the debates, he'll do it. Because let's face it, if he's not, and Ron Paul was not in all the debates, then there's no way to really beat these guys, because it's just one versus the other. But if Jesse Ventura gets into the fight, I don't know. What's your outlook for 2016? Would you like to see a Jesse Ventura run, or is there somebody else you have in mind maybe to run in 2016?
Well, I mean, 2016, the one bigger alternative to the other two was Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. He got almost a million votes. And a million votes is pretty good for a third-party candidate, but it shows you how little it is compared to the 40 million that the other two got. So, the most successful third-party candidate was Ross Perot, but look how much money he had. You know what I mean? He had all this money to put into it, and I think he ended up getting like 20% of the popular vote, which is pretty good for a third-party candidate. But again, he had all this money, and I think the country's still far away from a third-party candidate. But if it's going to happen, it'll happen when it's an open White House seat, like it is in 2016. But Jesse Ventura is pretty popular. There's some people who don't like him, and from what I hear, as a good governor. In Minnesota, I don't think he left with a very favorable rating. I'm not sure if I'm accurate or not, but I do agree with a lot of what he says. Some of his stuff, not so much, but I would have voted for him over Romney or Obama any day of the week in 2012 if he was in there. But again, yeah, if someone's not on all 50 ballots, if they're not in the debates, they don't stand a chance. So I agree with him saying that unless that happens, he's not going to, he won't run, because it would be pointless and a waste of time and energy. But I don't know. I like Rand Paul. I like Ted Cruz. I don't like Chris Christie. I mean, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are constitutionalists, and they put their foot down on stuff like the IRS and immigration and that kind of stuff. So guys like that. But you know as well as I do, the presidency is a popularity contest, and they're going to look for somebody that relates to the people. So I could see a Marco Rubio in there for 2016 from the Republican side, just because he's got a Latino background. And I don't think it's any secret that Hillary's going to run for the Democratic Party. And if she wins, I might finally off myself, because that'll be the beginning of the end.
I totally agree with what you said there. Now, obviously, you've been talking a lot about the open borders, and we do have the open borders. I remember that video where you're talking and the fence right there, and there's luchadors going across the border
right
there. Do you ever see a time where they really enforce the borders, and then obviously they frisk you if you ever fly anywhere, because Al-Qaeda might be Al-Qaeda and maybe sneaking on the plane, even though, as we've found out now, we fund Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria. So, your thoughts on the open borders, and do you ever see maybe that changing in the future?
The border is so big. I mean, you got, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and California. They're big states, and that is a big border. The only thing that's going to secure that border is not so much a fence, but resources. You know what I mean? You need actual people down there. You need National Guard. You need more troops. And where are all our troops now? They're overseas in countries they shouldn't be in. So until the priorities by the politicians is actually putting America first, then I don't think the border will ever be secure. They might say, oh, we're building these fences or we're doing this, but will there actually be security? I don't think so. And it's not just on the border, like I was saying earlier. It's in the airports. It's international airports. Those are border states too, because the people come in with work visas, tourist visas, and they just stay. They say, "Oh, I'm not going on my return flight. I'll just stay here." And nobody monitors them. I say take fingerprints of every single immigrant when they come in, and then when they leave, take, you know, mark them off saying they left, and don't let, you know, when they come back in, do the same thing. It's just incompetence, and it's just not their priority. So whatever border security they pass, I just don't see it being sincere and actually being effective unless they put America first. And all these politicians in the past, you know, 30 years have made it clear that America is not their priority. It's overseas. So I don't think it makes a difference.
I don't even think people really realize, you know, unless you're down there by the border, how many people have lost their lives, you know, trying to protect the border.
Yep.
And then we have a government that ships guns to Mexican drug lords, thousands of guns and hand grenades. And then we're hearing about, you know, people losing their lives because of these firearms, and obviously came out in documents that they did all that to blame the Second Amendment. So it's no coincidence now that they've gone more and more after the gun rights as
well.
Well,
right, yeah, they have no problem giving the Mexican cartels guns, but we're not supposed to have them, you know. Yeah, it's just nuts.
And all these elitists that want to get rid of the guns, they have bodyguards with guns.
Of course they do. That's why I tweet Piers Morgan every single day and tell him how much of a piece he is, because he's a foreigner coming to our country trying to tell us how to live, and not, you know, he's got this hour-long program every night to actually report the news. Instead, he does, he pushes his anti-gun agenda and anti-American agenda. Gun control just doesn't work. And do I think every single person should be walking around with a gun shooting each other? No, that's definitely not. But go to a gun show. I've gone to gun shows before. Nobody gets shot up at gun shows, and look how many guns are there. It's the gun-free zones, and it's the crazy people with guns that are making it, doing all these deaths, these school shootings and whatnot. But, it's also media manipulation. If you look at the FBI database, violent crime, gun deaths are all down in the past 20 years. They're not up, but the 24-hour news stations are making it seem like all this stuff is, you know, the world's going to end because of guns, and it's just completely absurd. Look at Chicago, Washington, D.C. They have these strict, yep, strict gun laws where civilians can't carry, and they get the most gun deaths. So it obviously doesn't work, and it's the morality of the people. People need to change, not the availability of guns. And as long as there's crazy people going around, and you know, the economy is bad, and people don't have a reason to live anymore, and Walgreens and CVS is getting built on every street corner, giving pills to everybody, then the gun deaths will continue. It's not going to be a matter of, oh, get rid of the guns and people will be safe. No way.
Well, I don't know if you ever thought about it. I'm sure you probably have now, because you've been kind of thrust in the limelight of this debate, and you've got a lot of visibility. You've been on a lot of interviews. You've been on ABC. Is there any thought maybe somewhere down the line maybe you consider running for public office?
You know, it's definitely something I've considered. Whether I do it or not, I don't know. There's a lot of time, a lot of politics you have to play, obviously. And there's a lot of I might be too honest, because I would not change. I wouldn't go out there and say, well, yeah, I agree with you just to get votes. I don't know. I would definitely consider maybe something at a small level and see how it went, and then from there maybe something bigger. But if you're thinking like president or something like that, absolutely not. Why would anybody want that job? You know what I mean? I would never.
Well, the job is just a puppet.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, for me to be preaching all this stuff I've been preaching for the past 3 years, and then go out there and take money from a Wall Street company, and then, you know, screw over the American people. No, I'm an American. I'm for the people, you know. And once the people realize that this is their country, not the politicians' country, then we'll be better off. But all I think they need is a figurehead to spread that message and let people know that, hey, this is your country, and not the media, not the governments. But I don't know, it's something I've definitely considered maybe somewhere down the line. But I would say right now maybe 40, 60, or 30, 70 in the no department, but I could be swayed. Who knows? You know, if I get bored one day and I feel like pissing more people off, maybe I'll run for office. Yeah.
Another question from Twitter here. Have you ever met Jan Brewer?
Well, of course. She's my mom. Of course I've met her. you know, Jan Brewer's office actually has been asked to comment on numerous interviews, and she's refused.
Including the Nightline interview. Yeah, they mentioned at the end of the
day. Yeah, there was about three or four different reporters who have done interviews with me and said that they reached out to her office, and one reporter said that her office said, yes, we know about him. We've never commented before. We're not going to comment now. So I think sometimes no comment is actually better than commenting. So, you know, she's got my same last name, my same DNA. We're from the same state, but unfortunately our paths have never crossed since I started wrestling. So there you have it.
I want to mention RJ is on Twitter. You can follow him at RJBrewer1070. Obviously, the famous Bill there in the state of Arizona. And, of course, you can catch him on Lucha Libre USA. We're talking to RJ Brewer. And I want to ask you a little bit about wrestling, going back to wrestling, because I was actually following your Twitter, and I noticed one of the tweets you just tweeted, something about a TNA tryout. Can you comment on that?
Oh, that was a joke. I just said that I was working on some of my jiu-jitsu moves and my ground and pound and my sprawl to work for my TNA tryout, because I guess they just signed another another old UFC fighter, and I think a couple weeks earlier they released a bunch of other talent. Is that true?
Yep.
And,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it was just kind of a joke. I mean, the fact that they've had how long have they been in business? Over 10 years, right?
2002.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been in business for 11 years, and they haven't made any impact, even though their name says Impact. It's just completely absurd. And on paper, I think at one point they had better talent than WWE did, in ring talent. And what they did with that talent was just an atrocity. And they have this primetime spot, and they get rid of probably real wrestling fans who actually love the business, and they sign MMA fighters, and it's just crazy. I don't get it. I guess I never will understand it, and I don't know. I just got a lot of people on there who agree with me, so I just figure I want to try to make them laugh today.
Yeah, you mentioned the same thing I did, the TNMMA,
right?
Because the relationship with Spike TV is obviously pushing more of the Bellator MMA, and obviously we've seen King Mo on TNA. We've seen now Rampage, and then of course the mystery guy on August 1st was Tito Ortiz.
What a bombshell, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, what a surprise that was, right?
Yeah.
Now, I listened to another interview you were doing, and you were talking about, you know, when you grew up and you started to get into wrestling, following wrestling. It was very exciting. You want to watch it every week. It was the cliffhangers from week to week. You can't wait to see the next week's show. And then obviously the overexposure of the product is alarming. I mean, you have TNA, you have WWE, you have Raw, you have SmackDown. Last night was Total Divas on, and I mean, it's just, I mean, NXT, and they have WWE Superstars, right, and all these shows. And I agree with what you were saying. There's just nothing special about wrestling anymore. The characters are overexposed. Even guys that are really good, say a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk, they're really good, but when they're on every single week, and then every single pay-per-view is headlined by the same talent, it's the same product over and over, and there's not much variety out there.
Right, right. You know, I had lunch with Stevie Richards on Friday down in Florida, and he was going up to Tampa for a convention and a show, and he stopped by my house, and we went out and had lunch, and he's a good friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, we talk about the wrestling business all the time, and he was saying one of the worst things is all this, you know, all this footage all the time showing people what happened the week before. Well, Puff, if you missed it, you should watch more often. And that's the message they should be sending, is not so much, hey, there's going to be the surprise guest this Monday, or announcing who it is. Why not just do something and then send the message to these fans? You should be watching every week because this might happen. And that's not there anymore. It's all about ratings and pleasing their sponsors and stuff. And I guess I understand that, but like you were saying, it's just so overexposed. Nobody's special anymore, in my opinion. And maybe that's because I've been wrestling for 13 years, and maybe I'm just a little tainted and I know what goes on. But like when I was a kid, you had to pay to see Hulk Hogan. You had to buy the pay-per-views. And he maybe occasionally on WWF Superstar Saturday morning, he'd make an appearance to do an interview. But you would never see these guys wrestling every single week, because they were stars. You had to earn that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with squash matches where guys on the weekly show, there's guys, you know, pushing the pay-per-views. I mean, that's ultimately what they should be pushing to. There was four big pay-per-views a year when I was a kid. You had to pay to see the stars, and if you missed something, well, you regretted it. I remember missing a Saturday night's main event, and the next morning, because I fell asleep, the next morning I was kicking myself. I was like, wow, I can't believe I missed that. And now you just got to put it on YouTube and see it. So, yeah, I just don't see this. I don't see that superstar aura anymore. And I don't think social media really helps it either. I mean, why should somebody buy a ticket to see you when you're going to tell them every 8 minutes what you're eating and how, you know, your workouts and all that stuff? I don't know. Maybe I'm just old school. I just don't like it.
We have the same, thoughts politically. I think we have the same thoughts with wrestling, because, and I've said this to other people and in other interviews I've done, is, you know, we grew up watching jobber matches, and there's nothing wrong with a jobber match. It's just we have WWE has this roster, and it's basically this roster versus this roster week after week. It's the same people on the shows, the same people on Raw. Remember when the brand extension at least kept some of the talent on one of the shows, some of the talent on the other shows? Now they're just all crossover. You see the same matches over and over because I don't think they keep track of who they book in these matches. And to me, the main thing about Raw and SmackDown and TNA Impact on a weekly basis, it's not must-see television,
no,
as you were talking about.
Not at all.
There's nothing that you can watch an edition of Raw, and like you said, if you missed 3 or 4 weeks of the show, they go back.
Right.
You know, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. There's nothing about the show that is must-see. And to me, I don't think they've really had a home run storyline. I'm thinking back, when I think of home run storylines, I think Vince McMahon versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
I think of NWO. I don't think of anything in the last decade that really blows me away. I mean, they had the WCW invasion angle fall in their laps, and look what they did with it.
Exactly. I mean, how many times, like, you know, going back to the job matches, why would you invest all these thousands of dollars in somebody and then have them lose in 8 seconds? Like, that's one of your stars. You should be building him up to do something, not giving him all this money every week and giving him this merchandise to have him lose to somebody else in 30 seconds. That doesn't do anything for anybody. Bring in a local guy that nobody knows and have them squash that guy. I don't understand it. And you go, like, there's no build to the matches anymore. Like you were saying, well, you know, you missed this match tonight on Raw. We'll wait 5 months. It'll be on again on the next 3 pay-per-views. I mean, Hogan and Warrior, what did they wrestle one time and that was it? And how memorable was that match? They only wrestled once, I think, as far as I remember, WrestleMania 7. I think that was the only time they ever wrestled. And look at, like, you know, Hogan versus Randy Savage. How many times did they headline a pay-per-view? Maybe once? I don't know. Cena and Orton, how many times did they wrestle each other? 55? You know what I mean? So, yeah. Where is the bill? Why would anybody care? I don't know. Maybe it's just a younger generation who don't think like this, but this is the reason I don't watch it. And I'm not saying WWE's formula is wrong, because clearly the bottom line is to make money, and there's kids that are watching the show, and that's great. But there's more kids watching than people my age, so I don't think they should be catering to what I want, but doesn't mean I have to watch it either. And that drives me crazy when people bitch every single week, yet they still watch it. So, well, you're not sending them a message by watching it. Stop watching, and maybe enough people will do that where they'll start changing things around a little bit.
Well, we do know WWE is in business to make money.
Sure.
But then I watch TNA, and I don't know, are they in business to make money? I don't know if are they trying to make money?
Well, from what I understand, they haven't. So if they're in that business,
yeah,
they should probably change their model. But again, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of them. I don't know if they're making money or not. I could be saying all this stuff, and they could be making a killing, and I just don't know. But it's not something I'm going to watch to find out, because they had their chance with me about 8.5 years ago, and they lost it, so I'm not watching it.
We're hearing about the restructuring, and unfortunately, as you were talking about, a lot of the good wrestlers are being let go in favor of, I guess, MMA stars.
Right.
So I don't – to me – I mean, honestly, if you're an MMA fan, if you love UFC, you love Bellator, are you going to watch these guys in professional wrestling matches?
Absolutely not. And
it makes no sense.
No, and I don't like the crossover either. I don't like when a pro wrestling promotion, whether it be an independent or something on TV, says, well, the next match is going to be an MMA-style match. So what are you saying? Every other match is fake except for this one? I mean, that's
right.
Ridiculous and absurd. People who want to watch UFC, want to watch people get hit in the face for real and watch arm bars and ground and pound, they're going to watch MMA. They're not going to watch pro wrestling to see that. People who are watching pro wrestling want to watch pro wrestling. If there's a little bit of crossover with certain moves and stuff, yeah, you might get an applause and it might be cool. I mean, I've used triangle chokes in my matches before and stuff, but to actually go out there and try to bring UFC guys into pro wrestling and to promote an MMA show, what is that doing for your show? Absolutely nothing. All it's doing is promoting the MMA show.
Obviously, you had a chance to be a part of a WrestleMania. I don't know if everybody knows that, but you were actually in a WrestleMania. Obviously not as a character, but you were with The Undertaker at the WrestleMania Madison Square Garden. Obviously, you got a little bit of a feel being in, you know, the big show and being on the big stage. How come nothing really has ever come with WWE? You had a chance to go down to OVW for a while. Nothing really seemed to click with them. Any idea, you know, you're just not what they're looking for?
I don't know. You know, I was wrestling for them. I was doing dark matches, Sunday Night Heat, Velocity for 3.5 years. I mean, they were using me. I was living in Massachusetts. They were using me all the way down to Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia, and Jersey, and Connecticut, Rhode Island, and I was all over the place for 3 years doing dark matches, and not one time did they tell me, work on this, work on this. It just kept saying, you know, keep doing what you're doing. We like you. And at one point, I remember one point I was sitting down with Tom Pritchard, and he said, well, we're looking to offer you a contract after WrestleMania. And that was the WrestleMania you were just talking about. And it just never came. And I never really got an answer why. You know, it's show business. Sometimes they see something, and a week later they might not like it. I remember one of the conversations I had with them was, well, we need you to put on 15 pounds or so. Can you do it? And my exact words were, yes, but I can do it naturally, so it's going to take me some time. And I think they just lost interest there. So I think I don't know. I had talked to Johnny Ace again, you know, a couple years later, and he said, well, you know, you're always a good worker and you had a good look, but we need you to work on your creativity a little bit. And I thought that was ironic considering they stole my stuff, you know, 4 years later, but,
yeah, right.
But you know, it is what it is. And, I'm fine if I never wrestle for WWE or never headline a pay-per-view, I'm fine with it. Obviously that was the ultimate goal when you get into wrestling, was you want to, you know, be on the big screen, but I'm content doing what I've done. I've had a healthy 13 years. I don't have any injuries. I didn't get hooked on drugs. I never sacrificed any of my morals, and I've had some good matches. So I'm content. I'm good. There's life after wrestling, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. And whatever happens after wrestling, I'm ready for it. So
you just turned 34?
Yes.
Okay, so 34. You were talking, you know, earlier in your career, obviously. Anybody gets in the business, whether they'd say it or not, obviously their goal is to get to WWE.
Sure.
Let's face it. I mean, that's the biggest stage. It's the biggest payout. I mean, if you're going to bust your butt, you're going to bust your body, you want to get paid for it.
Right.
I mean, you'd be foolish not to. So obviously at that time when you broke in the business, you wanted to get to WWE or WWF by that time. But, you know, it hasn't happened. At 34 now, what's your outlook? What's your goals? New Japan, All Japan, traveling the world, TNA. I mean, what's your goals here from this point in your career?
Well, you know, right now, Lucha Libre USA, you know, I'm contracted to them. I can still go and do independent stuff, but in terms of TV promotions, you know, that's who I'm working for, even though we're not really, you know, filming anything new right now. If and when that stops, I'll analyze things. I could see myself being done wrestling in the next year or two and maybe shifting into something different. Like you were saying, maybe politics, maybe something else. But I don't know. I don't plan my life more than 6 months in advance because it never happens anyway. So I kind of just go with the flow, and if an opportunity presents itself, I'll look at it and I'll see if it's something I want to do. And if nothing presents itself, then I'll just go out and make my own opportunities, and we'll see what happens. But right now, going out and talking about immigration and that kind of stuff is my main focus, and we'll see what happens down the line.
I remember you, like, in Ring of Honor, say, 2003 or 2004, mm-hmm. when you were working with CM Punk, and, you know, you had some really good matches then, and obviously CM Punk is on the biggest stage now. So I guess, you know, when you look at his career, and obviously you followed him all these years, your thoughts on CM Punk kind of going from the Ring of Honor CM Punk to the WWE CM Punk?
Well, you know, you reach a certain point in your career where you say, well, do I want to keep wrestling, do I want to wrestle 4 or 5 times a month on the weekends and make little money, or do I want to go become a millionaire? You know, and that's what a lot of people, they finally reach that point where they say, well, it's time for me to go and try something else. And Punk was always a solid worker. His mic skills are great, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy for any guy who works on the indies, busts their ass, travels around because they love the business, finally get to the stage where they're making a lot of money and they're somebody big. And I think that's great. Like, you know, guys like him and Danielson, I think it's awesome. I've said in other interviews, I'd rather see guys like that who actually took the route that I took, make all this money, as opposed to somebody who, twisted their ankle in the CFL and all of a sudden they're a pro wrestler. And they're headlining pay-per-views, even though they don't know how to do a tie-up. So it's cool to see them, guys. I've always been friendly with Punk. I like him a lot. He's a good guy, and I know a lot of people have different opinions on him from their encounters with him. But he's always been very good to me, and I'm happy for him, and I'm glad to see that he actually made that transition. And look what he's doing now. So good to him. Very happy for him.
Yeah, I'm getting questions on Twitter about Ring of Honor, and of course you previously worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Two-part question would be, one, would you ever, want to go back to Ring of Honor? And number two would be your thoughts on where Ring of Honor currently is. They were bought by Sinclair. They're on Sinclair stations. They tried the internet pay-per-view game. It didn't really work out for them. They didn't a TV company not producing an internet pay-per-view. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but it didn't quite work out. So your thoughts on a possible return to Ring of Honor and kind of where the company stands currently?
Sure, it would definitely be something I would consider. I don't rule anything out. The only thing I would never do in pro wrestling is wrestle for TNA. I've made that clear. That's the only thing I wouldn't do. But anything else, WWE, Ring of Honor, independent, sure, it's definitely something I would consider. And it's not something I'm ruling out somewhere down the line. So who knows, maybe. I'll just leave it at that. It's not something that I am looking at right now, but if the opportunity comes, then I would definitely be interested. And in terms of what they're doing now, I haven't really watched too much of it. Down in Florida, the TV show was on once a week, and I don't know if it's still on, but I would watch it here and there. And, you know, the wrestling matches were good. The quality of the production wasn't that great from what I saw, but I don't know if they've changed that around a lot. The problem I think Ring of Honor had was they went from this company that was more based on DVD and like almost like a cult following. And when you go to mainstream TV, you almost have to change the product up a little bit to attract more casual fans. So I think they lost a little of their edgier stuff and a lot more of the strong style type wrestling, which I think is good. I mean, you want these guys to be able to wrestle longer, but I think in the meantime, they might've lost some of their other fans because those are what their fans wanted to see. So, you know, going to TV and being strictly a DVD company are two different extremes, and I don't know if they've encountered any problems or not, but I don't know financially how they're doing. I don't know how they're drawing. I don't really know much about them. I just still have a lot of friends that wrestle there, but I haven't really been up to date. Maybe you can tell me. I mean, are they drawing well still? Or?
You know, honestly, if you look at their attendance figures, sometimes they can outdraw TNA,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny because TNA obviously is on Spike, and they have the bigger – more recognizable names, but at times, you know, Ring of Honor can outdraw a TNA house show.
Well, I think if I put enough planning into a family barbecue, I could probably outdraw TNA too, so who knows?
I think Ring of Honor falls into that ECW syndrome of being too big to be small and too small to be big.
Right.
And it boggles my mind, though, that they are actually owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, which is in a television game, and they can't produce an internet pay-per-view.
Right, right. Yeah, it's bizarre. And like I said, I've always stayed out of like the production part of wrestling and the backstage stuff because that's where you get even more frustrated. And, you know, being a wrestler is hard enough. So I've always stayed out of that stuff. But, you know, you got to give Ring of Honor credit for a company that started just, you know, doing DVD internet sales and to have the kind of following they had. That's pretty impressive. So they did, you know, they did a lot of stuff right when they started out.
Now, obviously, you trained with Killer Kowalski, mm-hmm. and I was just off the top of my head, I could think of Triple H, Frankie Kazarian. I think Trip came from Killer Kowalski.
He did, yeah.
China, April Hunter, Slick Wagner Brown.
Yep.
Is there others I'm thinking of as well, Killer Kowalski?
Well, Damian Sandow, who's Aaron Stevens.
Okay.
I trained with him. He started a little before me, but we trained for a lot, and we actually, you know, wrestled each other quite a bit back in the Indies. And Ken Doan trained with Kowalski too.
Kenny Dykstra.
And you know, Eddie Edwards from Ring of Honor trained with him for a while. So there's a good amount of guys that went on to do some things that trained under Kowalski.
Yeah, just kind of reflecting on your days there, learning from obviously a legend, a WWE Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. and kind of what you take away from your experiences training at his school.
Kowalski was great. I mean, when I started training, he was only. You know, he was pretty, you know, he was up there in age, so he would get in the ring once in a while on the weekends. But for the most part, it was more his words that were training you than his actions. You know, there was a guy, Mike Hollow, who was his head trainer, who was phenomenal, too. I mean, I was never in better shape than I was training under Mike because he just, you know, he rammed the basics in our mind, conditioning, being safe, taking care of yourself, your opponent. So that kind of stuff was, you know, just instilled in us. And I remember going there and just loving it right away because it was, you know, I came from playing college football and I was like, well, this is awesome because it was all these like hardcore drills and getting in good shape. And but then you reach a certain point where you can't kill your body all the time once you've learned. So, you know, once you've learned the basics, you don't learn so much more by keeping, you know, repeatedly doing drills. You have to kind of go out there and do matches. So that's when I started, you know, about a year into my training, started working matches. But, you know, Kowalski always taught to just, you know, be believable, make the people notice you, and just, you know, he always said shoot for the moon, and worst case scenario, you'll land on a star. And he was a very good guy, positive, nothing like his character. I mean, he was this hated villain, and he was actually a really soft, sweet guy. And I remember seeing him in the hospital right before he passed away, and it was very sad. But I'll always remember him as, you know, as this really warm guy who, you know, took me on and trained me. And between him and Mike, they're responsible for me becoming as crisp as I was when I first started wrestling.
Now, obviously, you've been in the business for a long time. How is your body holding up?
My body is great. I probably in the same shape I was when I was 20. I don't feel bad. You feel certain things, certain pains here and there, but I can, you know, I'm still running, I'm still swimming, I'm still lifting weights, and my body's held up. And I think a lot of it has to do with two things. Number one, you know, I never put a steroid in my body, and you know, that stuff makes your bones so brittle. A lot of times when you got guys who are repeatedly abusing that stuff, and they're putting, you know, all this new weight on these weak joints, that's when people start breaking bones and pulling stuff. So I've kept myself natural over the past 13 years, and like I said, never put that stuff in my body, so that's really helped me, stay in shape. And that, and I've always picked my bumps wisely. I'm especially the past four or five years, I'm not on every single show, every single weekend, still wrestling for exposure. It's like I am who I am now, and I try to make my appearances mean something, kind of like we were talking about before. So, I just pick my shows wisely. If it's a show that I'm going to learn from, I get a quality opponent, some decent pay, I'm going to go out and do it. Otherwise, it's just, I don't see the point of going out there and killing myself at my age. So you only have a certain amount of bumps in your body, so I try to make them profitable and, you know, professionally worth doing.
Another question from Twitter. I don't know, this might be hard for you to answer, but, I mean, you had so many good matches. Is there a favorite match or maybe a best match that sticks out in your career?
Favorite or best match? Oh, you know, when I was my favorite match, just not so much because of the match, but because of the reason we did it, was my senior year in college, which was it was a year after I started training, because I started training my junior year. We did a show at my college. It was a benefit for cystic fibrosis. One of my friends there in college had cystic fibrosis, and we did a benefit show to raise money for it. So that was really good. It was about 500-600 people, you know, most of the people from my college who I knew, and it was one of my first, you know, big singles matches. So it was a little on the nerve-wracking side, but we raised a lot of money for a good cause, and that was a lot of fun. Guys came and worked for free, and I would say that was, you know, by far my favorite. But as opposed to favorite, you know, actual matches, man, I don't know. It's hard to say. I've had so many. A lot of my old Ring of Honor matches, some of my Lucha Libre USA matches with Blue Demon, just because of the crowd noise and the actual heat that I had. It's hard to say. I can't really pick out one, but definitely there's been a lot of memorable ones, more good than bad.
You've had a lot of great opponents. Is there someone that you've yet to work with, you like to work with in the future?
That's a good question. I think I wrestled a lot of, you know, back in my Ring of Honor days, I wrestled a lot of the guys, like, you know, I wrestled Danielson and CM Punk and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. So I was fortunate enough to get in the ring with those guys. And even most recently, wrestling for, like, you know, independent companies like Big Time Wrestling, I got to wrestle RVD in one of his last matches before going back to WWE. I wrestled Matt Hardy a bunch of times and Kevin Nash, and I don't know. You learn from everybody, whether it's good experiences or bad experiences. You always take something from every match. So I can't really think of anybody right now that I really want to wrestle. But there's nobody I wouldn't want to wrestle either. So, you know, take what you want from that.
Now you got a big weekend coming up. You were posting it on your Facebook page. A couple of really cool looking posters. You're going to be working with some legends this weekend: Ric Flair, Terry Funk. You're wrestling Matt Hardy again,
yep.
Mickie James, Shane Douglas. Can you talk about your weekend and how people can check out these matches?
Yeah, I'll be in, I think it's West Kaiser, Virginia, which I've never heard of. I think it's in the sticks, so that should be interesting. Always good crowds when you got nothing else to do but watch wrestling. That's this Friday night. Saturday night's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. I wrestled in Altoona earlier this year for the first time, and that building is really cool. I guess WWF used to film TVs there at the Jaffa Shrine, and it's kind of got like an old theater look to it, and that's a really cool building, and the fans were really rabid last time. That's where I'll be wrestling Matt Hardy, and then the next night, the 11th, I'll be right outside of Pittsburgh. And yeah, like you said, a lot of legends. Ric Flair will be there signing autographs, Terry Funk, Matt Hardy, Carlito, Chris Masters, Mickie James. So Big Time Wrestling always stacks their cards, has a lot of legends and a lot of future guys, you know, future stars. So I think it'll definitely be a good show, and I look forward to always wrestling in new areas where I've never been before. I tone down the immigration rhetoric when I go do the independent stuff, because, like I said, it's not so, which is not, you know, not something that the American fans want to hear so much. You almost get cheered doing that, and that's not my goal. So I wait, you know, I stick to the actual immigration stuff when I'm doing Lucha Libre shows. But yeah, big weekend, excited to get back in the ring. I don't wrestle too often anymore. Last time I was in the ring was about, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago when I wrestled RVD. So I'm back. I'm ready to get in there again.
And lastly, plug your social media. I did mention your Twitter, but you're on Twitter, Facebook, and you also have a website where you post a blog as well.
Yep. Twitter is, like you said, it's at rjbrewer1070. Facebook page is, there's two Facebook pages, a fan page and a personal page, but I accept everybody on my personal page, so it's kind of one and the same. RJ Brewer on Facebook, there's two of them. One is, like I said, one's a fan page, one's a personal page, and then rjbrewerusa.com is my website, and I try to get weekly blogs on there. The latest one is on racism. It's actually a good read. I got a lot of good feedback from that. And also on YouTube, we have a YouTube channel going now where I try to post weekly videos also, and some comedy stuff, some serious stuff. So trying to just use social media as best I can and try to stay, you know, keep relevant and reach different people.
I encourage people to follow you on Twitter because I enjoy your rants and I enjoy you taking shots at Piers Morgan, the Redcoat.
I'm going to be sending one out to him in about an hour, so I get it on the daily clock.
Sounds good. Well, we wish you all the best, RJ. I really enjoyed talking to you today. And as I said, I think we have a lot of like-minded ideas in political realms as well as the wrestling world. So it was good to talk to you today, and we wish you the best, and hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate the time. Thanks.